It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carme and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Carme.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Another bumper show for you this week. Obviously, we talk URC because the URC is something you cannot ignore. It's big. It goes on forever and it's in your face. There's a number of issues from last week's games that we'll have to chat about, as well as the upcoming games this weekend involving the bulk of all of the African teams. Brendan, last weekend, a bit of a bleak weekend for South Africa's teams. The Lions, for once, the shining light. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it's not often you can say the Lions are the shining light of South African rugby, but this weekend we were all very grateful for the Lions beating a second string Leinster team. A bit of a blood nose for the Bulls and for the Stormers. I think both of them sort of walked into a trap. Both of them sort of were a bit ambushed there. I was at Loftus and I was a bit, I suppose, disappointed in the Bulls with the way they were sort of outplayed by Munster's street smarts. If you go look at that game again, Munster got away with murder on the floor. They sort of were in the ref's ear the whole time. They were really sort of played it very smart the whole time. And the Bulls were a bit naive. And if you don't impose yourself at your home fortress, then something like that's going to happen. And, of course, I know everyone's going to talk about Johan Huisman's red card. My only comment about that is what I also said to Jake on Saturday, is that while it was technically a red card, you've got to wonder nowadays, rugby does itself no favours, and I've said this before and I'll stick by it, in what is a red card? Because a couple of weeks before, we saw Luke McGrath take out Kurti Arendse in the Leinster Bulls game, and also head high clash, upright tackle, etc., was only a yellow card. So you, from one week to the next, you don't actually know what is a red card. And I think while we all accept that we want to make the game safer and we don't want these head injuries, I think, it differs from week to week. It's inconsistent, much like the Lions game normally, but, it was a talking point at Loftus. Stormers, I just didn't seem to get going. It was a very strange performance from them.
It was very disjointed, and I think if you listen to John Dobson afterwards, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that personnel got introduced into that starting lineup, and as well as obviously from the bench, that hadn't played that much, and of course that's going to impact performance. But I think we're going to talk about it later on how you need to juggle your squad and sort of try and keep it fresh as you move forward, but that can also in the moment impact performance. And I think they were very much the victims of that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, for the Stormers have been sort of flirting with disaster all season, and they stick against this sort of rut where they want to play this beautiful expansive rugby, these 50-50 passes. And when it works, it's beautiful to watch. And they've certainly got the players to do that. But when it doesn't work, sometimes you have to buckle down, play territory, play the percentages. And it just seems like, this result was coming. Got to give Toby Booth some credit, though. I mean, Ospreys have been probably the best Welsh side out there. They're seventh now.
By a fair margin, actually.
Yeah, and they're certainly showing that there still is some life in Welsh rugby. And, they've been to South Africa twice. They beat the Lions in the Challenge Cup, coming from behind at the end there, and now they've beaten the Stormers in Cape Town, and that doesn't happen pretty often. And same with Munster. I think the worry for me is that we don't want teams working out how to win in South Africa. It's going to happen from time to time, but you want it to be the exception and not the norm, and I think that's a bit of a worry. So a lot of food for thought after this weekend.
Yeah, I think Munster is the one team that seemed to have cracked the code. What you said earlier about how they go about the ruck and what they do around it, most Irish teams do that, but I think they and Leinster as well do it particularly well. I suppose the Irish national team, do this pretty well as well, in that they create a bit of chaos. The pictures get blurred. So a lot of things happen, and some of it will escape the eye of the officials. I'm not having a moan at this. All I'm saying is that they do this particularly well, and you know, they get away with it. So good on them. And Munster, to be fair to them, you know, they are a team that thrives on creating a bit of chaos. I mean, they play with a lot of mongrel. They love an arm wrestle, close combat, tense battles. They tend to thrive in those environments. So you know, going to Pretoria, winning at Loftus, that's probably the way you're going to achieve victory there. And I thought they did it well.
What they also, I mean, if you look at their game again, they slowed down the game to a snail's pace. The water carriers were on every single stoppage. You know, it's little things like that, and they broke the Bulls' momentum. And it's quite interesting because it'll be interesting to see what they do late in the year when Andy Farrell and the Irish team get to Loftus for that first test. But it was obviously a tactic to break the altitude issue, to keep them fresh. And I'm wondering, the Islands game is pretty much very quick ruck speed, as quick as possible, and try and play a lot faster. I'm just wondering if they're going to alter it for Loftus, you know, because I suppose the box won't be too uncomfortable playing you know, slower.
You can still play that, but if you drag the 80 minutes out over a longer passage with more stops in play, breaks in play, then you know, they can still play in your hands.
Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting thing to watch in the future. But I mean, it obviously worked for Munster. I didn't think the ref had a firm grasp on it. I think he did his best under the circumstances. But certainly they were very street smart, and the Bulls weren't this weekend, and that sort of contributed to it. Ironically, though, Liam, it's quite interesting. Let's talk a bit of squad selections and things like that. The Bulls obviously were missing Marco van Staden and Marcel Kutsia. I bumped into Ruan Nokia afterwards and Marcel. Ruan Nokia looks like he's going to be back soon, hopefully for the Bulls sooner rather than later. They certainly missed a bit of leadership in that group, especially when Munster were talking to the ref the whole time. You felt Elric Rowe had a very good game, but you know, you felt you needed sort of that experience with captain. Just have a word with the ref every now and again, and that's sort of, yeah. But I suppose the problem for Jake is that this is the squad he's got. And yeah, there are still rumors, things going flying around. The Champions Cup, Courtney Dawes had a go at Jake. And he was asked again after the game, and he doubled down. So listen to what Jake said about his squad thing, and that'll give us a good lead into Leinster's Leo Cullen, the game you were at, and how he addressed the issue. So this is what Jake said when he was asked, was it the right thing to take the B team to Northampton?
There's no gamble, guys. I'm going to share with you, if I'd taken the other team there and we hadn't won, I probably would have been under more pressure. So the point is, it's got nothing to do with, you know, because you took that team and not this team and you rested these guys or you didn't play these guys or should have risked the injured guys that I left at home. I'm 100% confident that it made absolutely no difference. In fact, it probably highlights the fact that because these guys are such a good team, you cannot have the arrogance of playing the same team back, forth, back and forth, back and forth, flying, you know, with injuries back and forth. It probably reinforces everything I did think. Is that I knew it was going to be one of those tough games, and I didn't want to not give ourselves a chance to get a result in both. And that's very important, a result in both. I didn't go there thinking we could lose to Northampton and therefore put all my eggs in one basket. I genuinely thought by keeping players fresh, you know, I actually did a thing when I got home on the weekend, and we played almost the same side against Bristol. And we played almost the same side against, who was the other guys? Leon. And we won both. We won both. So, you know, that's also where people forget. You know, we took 85% of that team, 90% of that team that played against Northampton, and they won both those games. So
this is what Leo said about that squad selection.
We will, it's everything is fluid at the moment, isn't it? So, you know, there's a lot of work has gone in to get us in the position where we are in. So we need to bloody work hard to make sure we try and stay there and push on. So that's the piece. You know, like, because we travel away, like, there's obviously lots of made of squads and rotations and all the rest, and everyone will have a different view, won't they? Like, but for us, like, as in, you know, like, the model that we have, like, as in, we primarily bring young players through the system, and you've got to get them experience at some point. So, and for the bulk of the season, like, the 18 regular URC games, you know, like, we have a core group that we use, and a lot of these guys are with us here. So, but yeah, we'll make some assessments. See, there was a good physical game there as well. So, a few guys a bit banged up, and but we'll see how they are, and make some calls as to what we do this week. But listen, go down to Cape Town to play Stormers. Like, it's not going to get any easier for us, is it? Like, it's a bloody tough challenge down there. But that's the beauty, isn't it? Like, the competition for us, and it's tough, and our guys need to learn sometimes some harsh lessons. So they've got a bloody harsh lesson out there today. So, but the hope is always that you'll be better for that experience, as painful as it sometimes is. You've got to go through it. And yeah, it was rich learning for our guys out of that experience. As I said, as painful as it is. It's a challenge, isn't it? Like, and that's like, you're dealing with the length of the season, so whatever, you know, there's 18 regular season games, you've four Champions Cup games, there's four playoff games, you've still, like, if you want to win the URC, there's still another three knockout games, quarterfinal, semi-final, final. That's a hell of a lot of top-end games, isn't it? And then we have a lot of guys in your squads that are also playing international rugby, whether that's World Cup and Six Nations. So, like, you know, that's the thing. You know, you need to be able to rely on the next person up. Well, that's certainly our belief. And, like, this competition means a hell of a lot to us. You know, we've lost the last couple of semi-finals, but, you know, I know this, the competition has changed, but this will be one of the previous 4 years to that. So, like, it means something to us. It means a hell of a lot to us. Just like the Champions Cup means a hell of a lot to us as well. So, we'd love to be stay successful in both competitions, but it's an incredibly hard thing to do, and you see it in other sports as well that are trying to juggle, you know, classic, I don't know many soccer fans here, but like Champions League, and, you know, obviously we would watch a lot of Premier League football and how teams try to manage that as well. It's pretty hard going. So, and particularly with the nature of rugby and being a physical contact sport and making sure that you're able to deliver in terms of those physical performances. So, I'm not sure anyone has the exact secrets recipe, but we're all searching for it.
Okay, so turning to this week's games, so now there's a lot of pressure on Bulls and Stormers this week, and suddenly they started Loftus. That game, which was supposed to be a gimme against the Ospreys early in the season, if you looked at that fixture, you would say, oh, well, Bulls at home, you know, they should win that one quite easily. Now suddenly it becomes a much tougher task for Jake White.
It does. You can't afford now to... Well, when you play at home, in fact, you should look at all home games now as 5 pointers, not just ones that you should win, but you should win it well. Because there is such a... And obviously the Bulls have it a little bit easier than the Storms because they've got a little bit of breathing space. But it's still imperative if they're going to hunt down a place in the, you know, assure themselves a proper home quarterfinal and maybe even challenge them, you know, for the top two, which at this stage looks maybe a bit far. You have to win those home games and get a bonus point. I mean, there's no other way of looking at it. They have a few banana peels, and in particular, potentially that last one, where they away from home. They've got three home games and then they've gone away to the Sharks. So it's, you know, there's still a lot that can happen. And it's kind of strange that the Sharks have had a very weird URC campaign, can still be sort of kingmakers within a South African context. So, yeah, I would say three of the four, probably very tough, but all winnable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, next week's one is Glasgow Warriors, your second. So that's going to be an epic clash next week. Definitely a difficult run in. Stormers facing Leinster. Well, we've seen what Leinster bring. I'm sure they'll be a lot better this week. So the Stormers will have to up their game. But you still believe if the Stormers get right what they didn't get right last week, they should be too strong for that second Leinster side.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Leinster, in almost uncharacteristic or sort of waters that are uncharted for them, are under pressure at the top of the log because Glasgow Warriors can slip past them if there are any slip-ups. So, you know, they probably would have banked on points at Ellis Park, and then whatever happens in Cape Town happens. But now suddenly they went down there with not much to show. So it becomes a very important game for them. So yeah, I think the Leinster performance without doubt will be better this weekend. There's no, yeah, they will be a lot better than they were at Ellis Park. And of course the Stormers boarded dreadful at times last weekend. So you would expect them to be better too.
Yeah.
It'll be an interesting clash, because also the other thing we need to probably look at there is what kind of squad John Dobson will put out. Ordinarily, you know, against Leinster, you would want to put your best foot forward, but he's got a few injuries, so there's a couple of, he needs to juggle his resources a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean, there is a bit of jeopardy for the Stormers as well, because if they do lose that game, it almost takes them a knock. And I think what all of us don't want at the end of the rounds is that we have a situation where the Stormers are going to face the Bulls in the quarterfinal. We've had that before. It serves nobody. And I think from a South African viewpoint, you'd want as many teams as possible, which brings us to the Lions. They can also be kingmakers. They can do everybody a favor this weekend if they can back up the performance against Leinster. But that's the big question with the Lions always. Even for Roy.
Yeah, they haven't been able.
This weekend.
Outstanding 1 week, and then the next week they drop off the pace. And I think they're getting tired of being asked that question as to why that happens. But we've seen it. Their form has been capricious. I mean, they would be outstanding. Great in attack, hold the defensive lines. Then the next week, they flat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to put it down to celebrations afterwards. But there's certainly a missing link. So in terms of consistency, there's still some work to do there. But if they do it this weekend, I mean, that's as good a message to send the people that support them, that they are capable of stringing together a couple of good results.
Yeah, I think to me the thing is, this weekend Ivan van Rooyen was asked, you know, they seem to do great away from when their backs are against the wall. That was his comment. But certainly as a coach, you don't want to have your back against the wall the whole time. So somehow you've got to work this out. I'm not quite sure. I still wonder if there isn't maybe some sort of coaching missing link there, but I suppose we'll see where they end up. They can certainly do the other teams a favor, and they can certainly leave us all with egg on our faces. Let's hope they do, because it'll be from a South African viewpoint very good.
Yeah, look, I mean, they are very much still in contention for a place in the top eight. There are a number of teams, I think it's five teams within a point. Sort of a bunch of teams led by the Stormers. Ospreys are on the same number of points, and you've got Edinburgh, Connacht, Ulster, and then the Lions. So all of them, will eye a spot in the top eight. Three spots available, but there are five teams contesting it. No, actually more than five for those three spots.
So it's going to be a good fight.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But the Lions, they need to win this weekend if they're going to stand a chance of reaching the top eight. And, of course, they've got that match right at the end. And it'll be an interesting one, because the Storms will be away in their second last game. They go to Wales, and then they have to come back. The Lions would have played at home. So the Lions in that last game will almost feel more like the home team, in that they only have to cross the Karoo. They don't have to cross all of Africa.
Yeah. So, I don't know. To me, this weekend is going to be, it's going to basically separate some of these teams, and we'll see the title contenders. Although I think from a South African point of view, we don't want Munster to win twice in South Africa, because that'll be three times in a row if you take last year's final. So you need to peg that back. So go Lions. I think we're all hoping for you. the last one is the Sharks who go against the Dragons. That game against Glasgow last week, after that first half, I thought Glasgow were going to run away with the game. But very good second half performance by the second string Sharks side. And surely, if they perform like that, they should win against the Dragons, who've been equally poor the entire season. So I would say let's go for a Sharks win then, for nothing else except for squad morale and getting them ready for next week's game, where they will face Clermont at the Stoep, I quite enjoyed their marketing saying, let's make the scoop our stoop, which I thought was quite clever. Whoever did that.
Well, there's enough sofas there to make it a stoop.
I just keep on thinking, Opa and Oma said it'll be stupid. But anyway, that's the first thing I think I even know. Yeah, it's not going there. Let's just quickly run through the last games before we get into the other stuff. Friday Sharks, Scarlet. Sorry, Scarlet's not Dragon, sorry, but still. Scarlet's a 14th. The Sharks should win that. We got that one wrong. Ulster, yep. Benetton, that should be an interesting clash. Benetton been very good this year. So.
Yeah, and they've got something proper to play for now. I mean, they are not out of contention for spotting the top four. So they've got a lot of incentive there. And, of course, Ulster can still sneak into the top eight. But Ulster just haven't looked the business this season.
There's deeper issues there, I think, as well. I've read about it. I don't quite understand them all, but it seems there's lots of deeper issues there. Then Saturday, Zebra hosting Glasgow. Zebra 16th. I think Glasgow are going to win that, take 5 points there, which will up the pressure on Leinster. So that should be an interesting result.
Strangely, I wouldn't say, I think Glasgow will win, but I wouldn't guarantee them the 5 points. Let's see how Franco rotates his squad.
Bulls Ospreys, we've already spoken about. Then Cardiff, Edinburgh, interesting one as well. Edinburgh, Sean Everett. Cardiff have been also playing quite well. They've lost a bunch of games and they were very unlucky against Ulster. A couple of contentious calls there. But Sean Everett's side need this top eight place, so I'd back them away from home.
A difficult one to call. Certainly. I mean, there's no doubt Edinburgh eighth at the moment. So they would have huge incentive. But yeah, I'd go Edinburgh, but not by much.
Yeah, Cardiff have lost a bunch of games by less than seven this year, so they've been really unlucky. And that's going to be, it's just a pity the timing. It's at 4 o'clock. It's sandwiched in between the Bulls and Lions game, so not many South Africans are probably going to watch that. 5 o'clock, Emirates Lions Munster, and we've spoken about that. And then after that, Stormers Leinster, and then the late game is Dragons Connacht.
You're setting up for that?
No, I don't think you're going to get me there. That almost comes there in the same realm as the Western Force Melbourne Rebels derbies that used to happen in 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. I'm not sure too many South Africans will be watching that, but I'd favour Connacht for that one.
Yeah, you'd have to go Connacht. I mean, Dragons have been mostly woeful, actually.
Yeah, they haven't been that great, I must admit. That's our URC discussion. We've got a couple of extras here. We'll start with the junior box. They're going off to Sanzos in first under 20 rugby championship, which is going to be very interesting. They left this week for Australia for the Sunshine Coast. Most of those players have never been to Australia, so it's going to be quite interesting. Quite funny, one of them told me, JF on here in the Bulls lock, told me the one thing he wants to see is a kangaroo. And I said, well, I'm sure you'll be able to find one somewhere in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, we often see these videos of kangaroos pitching up, you know, in strange places, so chances are.
Yeah, if you're ever going to find one, it would be in Australia. I'm not quite sure at the Sunshine Coast, but we'll have to see that. I did catch up with the coach, Bafana Klerhu, and he just about the chances in the under-20 and what it meant to them. So have a listen.
Bafana, you guys had a taste last year of what to expect. It's the first Sanzar under-20. What's your expectations going into the tournament?
Oh, I think firstly we're excited and grateful that this tournament is happening. It's probably been a long time coming. For us, a good opportunity to test our systems, to really grow in terms of the behaviors that we want to be consistent in the group. And the next biggest thing is an opportunity to prepare as a group and to grow together as a group. Obviously, it's not to say everyone that's in the group will be part of the World Cup team, but the idea is that, you know, the core of these guys will take them will take on those experiences and use them going forward.
I mean, I know the long-term goal is obviously the World Cup, the Junior World Cup, but just in terms of getting out, are you aiming to obviously win the tournament? tournament and who's going to be your biggest rival around these?
Look, Argentina in our group, so it's important to sort of get an idea of how they play and how they do things. You know, if I say the biggest rival, it's going to sound weird, but it's probably ourselves, because we just need to know where our systems are. You know, the challenge with in the past is that we've got into tournaments completely cold and not knowing what we're capable of and what works and what doesn't work for us. So that, and the nice thing in terms of the teams you're playing against, you know, New Zealand play traditionally anyway. I don't know what they're going to be like. You know, at junior level, they've got a good forward pack with a very fast brand of rugby. And I think that's something we're going to face potentially against England. So that sort of helps us prepare for that. I think Fiji and New Zealand have got a similar type of style. The player quality might be the same, I don't know, but we're going to play Fiji first up. You know, so we're looking at that as a replica. I think Australia tactically very good, and technically I thought they had a very good World Cup last year. Just, you know, one or two results at junior level go against you. So I'm expecting them to pick up and carry on, and they've got the same coaching staff.
Last year you guys were caught out a bit on physicality in the Junior World Cup, especially against some of the Six Nations sides. When do you think this is going to level the playing field, and how much work have you done in terms of that as well?
I think it's going to help. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, the beauty of a junior tournament is that every year it's a new team and it's a different team. The fact is the Six Nations teams are still ahead of us, just purely because they get together in November. They play under 16 Six Nations and 18 Six Nations. So from that perspective, we've got a bit of catching up to do. But as a group, you know, there's a couple of guys here that experienced last year and they know the hurt of that. For us, it's also been emphasizing what Test rugby is about, which is really, if your set piece doesn't function, it's heck of a tough, you know, and we survived last year. I mean, I keep saying to everyone, not for anything, I think the group did well to come third, extremely well, tough third, but extremely well to come third. So hopefully this year we can again apply those lessons, but knowing we're a different team and a new team that's got its own mission.
That being said, Liam, you also had an interesting interview. You got it wasn't a Chasing the Sun interview, but you chased a box center done in Japan.
Yes, Damon Dalende was kind enough to grant me an interview. His club also gave the rubber stamp for it. So, I had a chat with him about, you know, life in Japan, his career, where he feels it's at. Is there another World Cup in him? What's the sort of drive and motivation to play in potentially a fourth World Cup in 4 years or 3 years' time? Because there certainly is competition, stiff competition in the centres for the box jerseys. He gave me some, I certainly sense some honest answers. You know, how does he feel in terms of his body, where he is mentally? I don't want to give too much away now, but yeah, he gave a sort of an honest appraisal of where he's at.
So that's our show for this week. We're going to leave you with Liam's chat to Damon. We'll chat to you next week. We'll certainly have a bunch of stuff to chat about. That's it. See you guys next week.
Panasonic Wild Knights. I loved my time here in 2019, and I really enjoyed my time when I went to Munster as well, but I was very sad to leave this club. But yeah, as soon as I left, I got in touch with Robbie straight away and tried to almost get myself coming back as soon as I felt like I didn't want to stay in Ireland for much longer, once my contract ran out. Since I've been back, it's been incredible.
And in terms of Japanese culture, the food, the things that you get up to recreationally, I mean, what are the sort of standouts for you? What do you like doing?
We obviously, my wife and I and the kids, we don't eat out that often. Now that the weather's getting a bit better, we can get the kids out of the house a bit more. I think for me, one of my favorite dishes is a ramen. I absolutely love it. And then a katsu curry as well, stock standard. It's very tasty, and it almost tastes like something that you have at home, which is very nice. Something nice and warm and filling. So, those are my two go-to dishes.
Tell me about the Wild Night season, because, I mean, you guys have been, well, running wild, I can almost put it that way. Yeah. Unbeaten the last couple of games. I mean, you've racked up 50 points in the last couple. And it looks like you're putting...
incredible.
Yeah, you're putting a clear distance between yourself and the rest. I mean, but what's different this year? Or is anything different?
I would say it's a little bit different to how we played last year, but also a little bit similar. I think, last year it was obviously Lewitt and myself came back into the system, and I was obviously had a taste of it in 2019 when I got here for the first time after the World Cup. So I still understood like the playing mentality and the shapes and stuff that that we wanted to run on the field. And it was quite similar when I got last year. But I still had to get aligned and get all the information back into my head and understand what you're trying to achieve on the field. And likewise, Lert also needed it. And I think we are at an incredible club. I think playing-wise and the way we get managed on and off the field, it's been incredible. I think it makes a big difference in terms of our performance on Saturdays. We have guys that probably won't even play the whole season. They won't make one top league appearance, but or league wide appearance, but they'll pitch up at every training session and make sure that we get better and put us under pressure in the week. So that when we play on Saturday we're under the best condition and we've seen the great like the right pitches that we want to see over the weekend. Training it does get quite tough. We obviously do a little bit of contact, which is obviously needed. Nothing too extreme, but the intensity of training is incredible. And even with the intensity of training, we still get managed very well. And I think our trainers and our conditioners they look after us very well, and they make sure that we get everything done. But we still only kick on Saturday. And we start firing properly on the weekend.
How does that feed into somebody who plays for the Springboks? Because obviously the Springboks have a particular way of playing. You also, in your squad, probably have about a dozen or so guys who are just on the other side of 30. The way that you train and play in Japan, is that beneficial for sort of the Bok blueprint and what you try to do there and try and achieve there?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I came to Saitama Panasonic Wild Knights for the first time in 2019, and that was just after we won the World Cup in Japan. And obviously, I had a good party, and I think I put on a kilo or two before I got back to Japan. And I really enjoyed my rugby, but I could feel I was a little bit off the pace, mainly because when we started playing, I could feel like the guys are, I wouldn't say a whole lot faster, but they're more agile, the agility is a lot quicker, and the speed of the game was a lot quicker than what I thought it would be, and I was just a bit off the pace. But I enjoyed the league, and I still feel I played all right, I played decent, which was nice. Then obviously coming back last season again, I remember that feeling coming to Saitama Panasonic Wild Knights in 2019 and playing in the top league. And remembering how fast it was. I did want to come back here and be a KO2 lighter and move a bit better around the league. And I think towards the end of last season, I started to feel my body was adapting nicely to the league. And I think the Japanese rugby has helped not just me physically, but also mentally wise in terms of how to play the game, not how to play the game, but the way we want to play the game and what I see on the field compared to before I came back here. So, I've loved every minute of it. I still feel like I'm learning a lot. We have great coaches at our club, and I feel like they've made me a better player in the space of 6 months last year. And even these four or five months that have gone past the season already, I feel like I'm a better player than what I was last season. And I think that's the most important thing. I come here and it's obviously nice to win trophies at international level, but it's still important to carry on learning and keep adapting your game and try and keep moving forward with the way rugby's moving at the moment. So, I think the top league has been incredible. I think a lot of the not a lot of it. A lot of the guys, I think all the Springboks that play rugby in Japan, whether it's the top league or the second division, they all love it. They all have fun. I don't think people realize how tough it is. People just see big scores and they think it's a walk in the park, but they don't actually see how tough and physical the games are. There are a lot of islanders here. There's obviously a lot of New Zealanders here now that played in the World Cup as well, and they've made the league even more tougher than what it was last year. And I think the physicality and the accuracy and the competition in the league has grown immensely over the last season. So, and I think it will get even bigger and bigger. And most of the guys that I speak to at the club, they all love it, and they all want more people to come here so they can test themselves against the best.
Yeah. I remember asking you in Sublets last year, leading up to one of the games, about potentially going for a fourth World Cup. Your sort of longevity post that World Cup. And I recall you saying something about, how rugby's taking a toll on your body, and, it's like kind of wait and see, post the World Cup to see how you placed. How do you feel about going or playing at a fourth World Cup? Is that an ambition? Given also the fact that, there are probably 10 or 12 other guys in the same boat as you, age-wise.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of us that are 32 at the moment, that'll be turning 33 this year. And to think of that in 2027, we'll all be about 35, 36. Which is, if you have a big group of 36-year-olds, it can be quite tough. For me personally, I think I'll just take it year by year. I think for me, as long as I'm mentally fine, and I'm still enjoying the game, and I'm still putting in the effort to get better, as long as I am getting better with the way that rugby is adapting at the moment, I still think I have a good shot. But if I'm not, at least I did my bit of contribution to making the Springboks better. And as long as I'm still there, as long as I'm in the environment, I'll carry on making the people around me better. And if I can help the next centre coming through, even if it's for one more season, that's the most important thing for me. Because I know if I can help them and give them a bit of advice, even though I won't be there, as long as they've learned something from me and they can take that moving forward.
Yeah. A good thing
for me, I'll just take it year by year and see how my body holds up and see how things go.
Yeah. Interesting that you mentioned centres, because I was going to ask you about that. Now, you're in an interesting position. You are one short of Jacques Fourie and Jean de Villiers' record of 29 appearances as a combination. You've got 28 caps with Lucanio and with Jesse as a combination. You're basically one short of the record with both of those guys. And this is an unfair question, but who would you prefer to break the record with? I'm joking. You don't have to answer that.
I don't know.
How do you feel about the prospect? Yeah. How do you feel about the prospect of going beyond that mark? And your name will certainly be attached to it one way or the other.
Honestly, I haven't thought about it. I just like to pitch up there on a Saturday, whether I'm playing with Luki or whether I'm playing with Jesse or if I play with Andre. I think for us, it's not really about those small accomplishments. I mean, it is nice, but it's not something I think about, or it's not something that bothers me. And I think Jesse and Luki will speak exactly the same way.
Yeah.
For us, we want to work hard and put ourselves under pressure and make sure we get results on weekends. Because we know,
What are the subtle differences playing with them? When you play with Jesse and then playing with Luke, what are the sort of subtle differences that affect your game?
They're both very similar. Also, on defense, I can't say if Jesse's number one in the world or Luke is number one in the world. But I'd say they're tied at number one in the world for defense, defensive reads and tackles and work rate. They both have great skill sets. But I think maybe Lucanio's distribution skills are a little bit better. But yeah, that's me maybe nitpicking, because I know Jesse's got a very good skill set as well. Like we saw at the World Cup, Jesse can kick. And I think he can kick off both feet as well, which is quite scary. But I think I'm maybe even just nitpicking, but
Okay, we're running out of time, but it will be remiss of me not to ask you about the upcoming series against Ireland, which is obviously massive in the rugby world, not just between the two countries. But you obviously played in Ireland. You know the sort of the culture there, what makes them tick. How big a deal is it for you to be involved in that series? Because obviously there's going to be a lot of hype around it. And then also, Jacques Nienaber doesn't coach the box anymore. He coaches in Ireland, and there will maybe be some influence there. Yeah. How do you think all of that will play out?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great series. I think we're only playing him twice, which is a bit, wouldn't say unfortunate. I think it's maybe a little bit disappointing. It would have been nice to play him three times. To make it a lot more interesting. But other than that, yeah, it's going to be incredible. They obviously played some great rugby again in the Six Nations, and they obviously won the Six Nations back to back. But like we saw when they played against England, they are beatable. And I'm sure the Springbok coaches, are already making plans around where we can expose them and where we can get good results on the field against them. But yeah, I think the main focus will be just for the Springboks as a group. I know we played Wales in the first game, and I think that's the most important game at the moment. I think the coaches will want the guys almost peaking against Wales, so that they know that everyone's ready for the Irish series. But yeah, it's going to be great. We've lost the last few games against them, all outside of South Africa. So yeah, it's going to be great. The last time we played, I think, in South Africa was in 2016, and we did lose the first test at Newlands. So I think there will be a lot of guys that are very excited to play against them. Just from last year at the World Cup, and obviously what happened in Dublin in 2022. So, everyone's excited. I know guys are still focusing on what they can achieve with their clubs, but I know that all those guys will also be having the thought of playing against Ireland to the back of their minds and preparing themselves mentally for that, because it's going to be a tough challenge.
And just on a personal note, the prospect of clashing heads, maybe that's not the right term to use, Bundy Aki. I mean, obviously there's a lot of talk about him and his influence on the game, et cetera, et cetera. That must be a challenge that you relish.
Yeah, always. I've said it in many interviews before, you always want to play against the best in the world. I've played against Bundy quite a few times, luckily now in my career. And every time we've played against each other, it's been a massive encounter. He used to just be a big robust center that could bully guys. He still bullies guys, but I think his skill set now is completely different. He really gets involved in the game, whether it's offloading and passing properly and just creating space for the others outside him. And the way his game has developed has been incredible to watch. And whether I play against him or watch the boys play against him, it's going to be a great atmosphere, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the Irish news.
Thanks for listening, and a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.